So then I went back to New York.
Now you're coming back to something that you said earlier when you were talking about the report you had to do on the West Coast on transportation and supplies, and now you're general manager of
transportation supplies.
Well,
the way that organization was set up was it had everything to it had responsibility for all modes of transportation: pipelines, rail, truck and car, marine, barges and tankers, etc. And the department was divided in two: transportation, which covered those things that I've just mentioned. Shell Pipeline, incidentally, answered to that transportation side, although it had a president and so forth. The other side, supplies, really had to do with the provision of crude oils and other raw materials for the refiners. And of course, it had to interface with the exploration and production as to what's coming, what types and amounts of crudes are coming in what places, etc. Day-to-day scheduling at times, and then filling in the purchases of crudes to fill out the thing, because Shell has never been self-sufficient in crude. Usually, at that time, roughly two-thirds of the crude we refined was our own, and the other third is purchased. And at that stage, very little of it foreign. Most of it you could trade and buy in the States.
I'm assuming that going from general manager to vice president, was that a step up?
Or was it a step up? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a step up. I don't know. It just seemed automatic. Yeah. I wasn't at the general manager level very long. I don't remember.
It's very exactly. Short. Yeah.
Very short. Very short. Yeah.
What was the situation in Shell in terms of people with technical background moving into upper management positions? For example, Dow Chemical at one point, you couldn't get a job with Dow if you didn't have a degree in chemistry or chemical engineering, regardless of what part of the company you were in.
Right, right.
And I'm just curious as to what the Shell situation was like.
The Shell hierarchy, we were all technically trained. And to a very large degree, that's still the same. It doesn't mean that everybody was a chemical engineer or a chemist, because there were physicists, there were geologists, geophysicists, etc., that got to that level. But they were technically trained, scientifically trained, I should say. And that goes. It wasn't in the early days of Shell's presence in the U.S. This is when the group first entered the U.S. on the West Coast, as an example. Some of the Englishmen, etc., were financial types, and they came to basically manage the situation. But certainly the war years forward, so it's been all technical.
What's your opinion about the advantage or disadvantage of that in today's climate, let's say?
I don't see it as a particular advantage, but I don't see it as a disadvantage either. I think it depends on the individual, and it depends on his surrounding staff. I would have great difficulty in the oil business of just appointing a lawyer, say, as president of the Shell Oil. I think he'd have a terrible, terrible time. Financial man might be a different story, depending on the individual. But if a man is technically trained, he has at least a fighting chance of understanding the technicalities of the business. And a lawyer has a tough time with that. Mm-hmm. At least the ones that I know.
You were in transportation and supplies only a short time before you became president of Shell Chemical.
Yeah.
Was Love still behind the scenes at this point, or was someone else?
Love was still around, but he was not the driving force there. The driving force there was a man named McCurdy, who by that time was president of Shell Oil. McCurdy had been president of Shell Chemical for 12 years. He's incidentally a geologist from Stanford. But here he was, out of that kind of background, into Shell Chemical as president for 12 years, then on to president of Shell Oil. There, when he moved on, then there was a Shell development man, chemical engineer, out of Purdue, who took the chemical job, but that was for, I'm going to say, a couple of years at the most. And he was at retirement age. And I guess when he moved into it, people kind of looked at it as an interim situation. I didn't have any idea that this was in the cards for me, or was even being considered. But McCurdy was the guy, and he just called me up and said, here's your next job. So there it was. And I'm forever grateful for that, because that was a good job.
Well, let me ask you a two-part question. One is, what was the Shell Chemical Company like when you started there? But you had no previous association with that.
It was a mess.
Okay.
Very briefly and bluntly.
And what was your agenda for the company?
My agenda was to straighten it out. And that meant straightening out organization and product line and so forth. It was organized along pretty ancient lines. Had product divisions with a general manager in charge of each division. There were six of them. And each of those were essentially autonomous. They had their own research liaison, their own legal, their own finance, their own manufacturing plants, etc. And they were little fiefdoms. And that's why they, back at the refinery and chemical plant level, you could never communicate. Well, I was determined to bust that up, because that just simply could not be in the proper interest of the shareholder from a productivity and efficiency standpoint. Just simply couldn't be. You can't afford that sort of thing. In addition, it also sheltered non-performers, and there were a number of them. So I set out to change the chemical thing. I visited every plant, every depot, every sales office, every lab within the first 8 months that I was there. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to do was find out, you know, what really was there. And it just simply confirmed that it was not in the best shape. It was it was small, it was not motivated. It had trouble making a profit at the bottom line. If you had any realistic type of assignment of transfer prices or overhead loads from the parent, what have you, if you had any of that realistic, you had great trouble showing any kind of a profit position at all. We're just kind of subsisting, you know. every once in a while, a decent idea would come along and somebody would do something about it. But even there, the lines of organization and the discipline, the lack of discipline therein, were just pretty awful. I found, as an example, in the first 3 months, a general manager who had signed off on an authority for expenditure of like $7 or $8 million in one of the plants. The manual on capital expenditures clearly said that wasn't even the president's authority, that had to go to shelf, and he'd signed off. Well, I just wrote him a little note and said, who authorized this? Well, and boy, that really hit the fan. there were a number of things like that. So we gradually got a hold of that, and and as a consequence of it, we began to be able to attract resources to expand our business, to sponsor more research, to really gain some respect in the other parts of the house, and so we just kind of went from there.
Was there a lot of kicking and screaming as you did this reorganization?
Just bloody screaming and kicking, absolutely. And in fact, there were there were some people who said that they could live with the change, but then I had to let them go before, because it turned out they didn't. There were some others who said, I can't live with it, and just left. But then there, of course, were the winners, too. Mm-hmm. And we had more winners than losers. we had some troublesome times in terms of developing personal trust. I guess that's the word. My own approach was if you can't really trust your fellow man, and your colleague, he's working for the same outfit. And one of my favorite lines in talking to him throughout the system was, we're all drawing the same color paycheck, fellas, all of us. And if we can't develop that, we don't really have any chance of working like a team. And if we're not a team, then we're all going to be trying to do in our own things, and that's just non-productive. We do not all have to go to every meeting. We can at least trust the next guy to represent us in that, our view, whatever it may, if it ever even comes up. Most of the time it doesn't come up, etc. This is the kind of preaching that I did. It's kind of sermonizing. And it took hold. It took a long time too. And there were very, very many days when it would be very discouraging, because somebody would go and do some silly damn thing, at least what I considered silly. Mm-hmm. And we got to a point where I could legitimately address them, and I put together a semi-annual State of the Union type thing, and I carried it around to different places, and I would talk to them about not only how we were doing, but where we were going. And I got to a point after a while where they really could begin to believe that when I said we're going such and such, that we really were. You know, at first it was just a bunch of hot air. I mean, you couldn't blame people for that at all, and just the viewpoint. But as we got particularly into our Olefins position, etc., and expansion there, and the concept of integration with the refineries, and the interplay of downstream chemical products with the raw material supply from the crackers back to the oil, its base itself. And you begin to get all that together. Then they begin to, then they got on board. And my concept, very simply, is that an orphan's cracker is just as much a piece of the refinery as it is a piece of the chemical operation, because it is basically a conversion process, just like cracking is, just like catalytic cracking or catalytic reforming. It's a conversion process. And if you cannot integrate the orphan's operation with the refinery itself, you're just missing a bet. At times you want to take your heating oil out of the heating oil business because it's not going to carry its weight, and crack it and make ovens out of it because it's going to do it. At other times it may go the other way. But if you don't have that understanding and can bring it to bear in your thinking and your planning, particularly long-range planning, then I think you just missed the bet. So, and that then is basically the theme on which, after I got the next job lined up, was basically the theme of how I mashed, if you will, the oil and the chemical pieces together. And I will have to say, I was really the architect there, whether people like it or not.
Somewhere I had, well, I know it's here. Apparently, when you, around the time you first started, there were 6 divisions.
Yeah.
And you had commented that at least one of them, synthetic rubber, was had a lot of tough competition at that time.
Oh, yeah. The synthetic rubber story is an interesting one, and it has, and is an example of that proves the point, if you will, what I was saying about the chemical side just kind of surviving and just moving. No one was doing anything. If you remember, the government sponsored the synthetic rubber business, and Shell and Dow co-operated pieces of the complex at Torrance, California.
Okay.
And that, since Shell was foreign owned, that took a special act of Congress, this sort of thing, or some government action. I don't know, just don't remember that end of it. The other end I do remember. And that operated during the war, and quite successfully, synthetic rubber's production. The war ended, and Dow really didn't want to keep going on it. And so McCurdy, then president of Shell Chemical, bought the whole complex. And to do so, it did take an act of Congress to do it, privatizing, if you will, among other things. But the foreign ownership was also involved. And so then it proceeded as a division of Shell Chemical for synthetic rubber. It lost money steadily. And when one looked at it, it was producing the exact same materials that the Firestones, Goodyears, Goodriches, etc. were doing. And they were the customers as well as their own suppliers. And therefore, they set the price on any and everything. So it just seemed like a losing proposition. We had no way in the world visible to develop another process that would, say, step over into a more efficient production or something of the sort. We had nothing in the works of that sort. We had no real strength. Couldn't identify a strength. We just had a plant. And we're trying to sell stuff on a contractual basis to Firestone, as an example. So, it just seemed like a loser, total loser to me. And so, one of my vice presidents, a fellow named Cunningham, Jack Cunningham, who had been synthetic rubber division general manager, and who had it dear to his heart, But he and I went to Akron, and we visited the top four at the senior most level. And we basically said, we're going to get out of the business. And do you know what? In all four cases, the answer was, we wondered when you were going to do that. Why haven't you done that before? How in the world could you do that? Could you compete? So we did. By this time, McCurdy had retired, and since he had bought the thing, I felt an obligation to call him and tell him that we were going to shut it down. And he said, okay. It didn't seem to bother him a bit. But I did feel an obligation to do that. So we did, and actually sold the property, I think, to Cabot. But it was basically a land proposition. And so that was one of the divisions gone.
But that means that that Synthetic River Division kept going 20 years after the war was over. At least 20 years, more than that.
Ridiculous, yeah. Absolutely ridiculous.
I didn't realize that. I was thinking of the dates. That's a long time to keep it going.
Yeah, I think Shell bought it in like...
It'd be 50,
something like that, yeah. It just didn't. You look back on those records, and at the time, and I don't remember any of the numbers, but you just shook your head, you know, how in the world? All we're doing is we're just keeping a bunch of people employed. We're not doing anything for the shareholder.
Well, there was new technology coming along.
Everything was happening, sure. The ammonia division, we got that shut down pretty quickly.
Okay.
But that came a little later. I think it was a little later. We basically rolled it into the agricultural chemicals division. At least got rid of the hierarchy duplication and so forth. And in the process of that, shut down the old original ammonia plant at Shell Point, with the one with the German fixtures that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And meantime, they had built an ammonia urea facility up at St. Helens, right at the foot of the mountain in Washington. And it was about as vulnerable a setup as I could ever imagine. Of course, natural gas is the raw material. And its supply was Canadian natural gas, which was interruptible under any circumstance. You could not get a guaranteed supply. And indeed, it would interrupt. Get cold, shut the plant down for a month, this kind of thing. Now, how in the world can you make any sense out of that? So we sold that. Sold that plant, shut down Shell Point. And there was an old, smaller one at Ventura, which went way, way back. It was really of little or no consequence.
Did plastics become the big...
Plastics became an objective. Not necessarily the number one thrust by any means. We had a polypropylene facility in Woodbury, New Jersey, that was operating by the time I came into the job. Had no polyethylene, we had a little polystyrene operation at it's on the Ohio River. Well, I don't know why I went blank. I'll think of it, but it's still today operating, but the polystyrene operations have long since been sold. Polypropylene was an older technology and has been replaced by the Unipol technology, et cetera. So Woodbury was sold also. Huntsman seems to have been real big in picking up this kind of stuff, and so they've done that.
What became your primary focus then?
Olefins. Because it fit the concept of integration that allowed things to be done organizationally and in an efficient way, as well as the allocation of internal resources. And now I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about people. It is almost a given in this business that you will not be in an expansionary mode in both refining oil products and chemical products at the same time. Very rarely does it happen that everything is moving up, mm-hmm. or for that matter, moving down. Now this is on a 5-year time frame, sorry.